Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is an in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is also available live via teleconference for public participation. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this hybrid meeting.
Good morning. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff participating telephonically in the meeting, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the telephone participants to please mute your telephones if you are not speaking. During the meeting, if anyone is having any technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers speaking. This meeting is being held in hybrid fashion with all members of the Board of Commissioners appearing in person in keeping with the Rhode Island Open Meetings Act. Specific RI Housing staff will participate via teleconference. Members of the public may also access the meeting via teleconference or attend in person according to their preference. If the teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio is restored. Today's agenda and information on the actions being taken are available on RI Housing's website. Chairman Retsinas will preside at today's meeting. A reminder to meeting participants, please do state your name prior to speaking each and every time. This is helpful for our minute taker and for those listening over the phone. Another note, we're returning to voice voting, so if you could please speak up nice and loud to say aye or nay. Now I'll return to Chairman Retsinas to please call the meeting to order.
Thank you, and good morning to all of you. Call to order the meeting, and let's start with a roll call.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman Nicholas Retsinas.
Here.
Commissioner James Thorson.
Here.
Commissioner Liz Tanner.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Leanne Byrne.
Present.
Commissioner Kevin Orr.
Here.
Commissioner Steve McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Maria Barry.
Here.
Roll call is complete. You have a quorum, Jim.
Thank you. You have before you the minutes of our last meeting, September 23rd. Is there a motion to approve?
Ms. Leanne, I make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
James Thorson, second.
Any discussion or any questions? I'll ask our general counsel to ask for a vote.
This is Corey Myers. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving the minutes of the Board of Commissioners meeting held on September 23rd, 2021, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by unanimous vote.
I do have to abstain. I wasn't here. So I'm just going to abstain.
Noted. Thank you.
I wasn't there either, so I'll abstain as well.
Okay.
Let's move forward. We'll start with remarks from our executive director.
Thank you, Chairman. Our single-family loan volume remains strong, and we are on target to exceed our 21 lending goal. We also have good news in our loan servicing area with an overall delinquency reduction year over year. Our delinquency in September was at 12.8% versus 14.8% last year at this time. Our seriously delinquent rate was also down slightly with the same compared with the same period in 2020. Our loan servicing group is also reporting a high percentage of borrowers that previously had a hardship related to COVID are now able to reinstate their mortgage payments. We believe that even with the homeowner assistance fund program, there will be borrowers that we won't be able to help. They have persistent issues, COVID-related issues, that such as loss of income that probably will result in the loss of their home. Some of these folks struggle pre-COVID, so it's not surprising that COVID has just caused their circumstances to become even more dire. Our development division has launched the RFP for housing tax credits. Applications are due in December, and we hope to bring recommendations to the board later in the spring. Development staff have also completed the first round of underwriting of Building Homes Rhode Island. I believe the HRC is on track to approve proposals in November. Speaking to the demand for this type of funding, we received 33 proposals requesting more than $54 million. So I expect that there's going to be more demand moving forward. When you think about, we only have $65 million total in the housing bond.
What was last year?
Last year, we didn't have the housing bond.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the first round.
With the housing bond?
Yeah, this is the first round that we just released. In our leased housing area, we're making terrific progress on deploying Rent Relief RI funding. As of yesterday, we've deployed almost $60 million, including a bulk payment to National Grid for $16 million. The team has conducted significant community outreach, including pop-up events that they've listed within this report to assist folks in completing the application. The next program we expect to launch will be the Homeowner Assistance Fund, which I spoke about when I was speaking to Leslie's delinquency. And this will assist Rhode Island homeowners with mortgage and utility arrearages, very similar to Rent Relief RI, only for homeowners. We're considering a pilot program because it's taking Treasury a very long time to approve our program outline. So we are looking at that, making it a very targeted pilot program, but we may release that shortly. Many other HFEs have launched pilots, including the state of Connecticut. So we have some, you know, we have some models to look at that we may be able to deploy here. I was pleased to accept this award on behalf of the agency for our workforce housing program at NCSHA's annual conference. And there were many submissions under this category, so it's great that our colleagues across the country thought that our program was worthy of this award. So congratulations to the team.
And to you.
On their work. They do a great job. The House Commission to Study Land Use Policies in the State has begun meeting, and Director Thorson will be representing the board on this commission. Thank you, Director, for serving on the commission. Amy Raynone and her team has finalized the low mod chart. We do this every year. It's a summary of the low and moderate income housing units we have in the state by community and also by state overall. I'm very disappointed to report that the state has lost 200 affordable units due to foreclosure, expiring affordability periods, and most unfortunate, the closure of group homes for disabled individuals in the state. Lastly, we successfully executed a new bond issuance for our HOB program, providing us with over $170 million to provide new loans, to refund higher cost bonds, and to purchase previously modified mortgages. The bonds were issued with a social designation, and there was strong investor interest. Let me pause there, Chairman, and open it up for comments or questions.
Questions, comments?
You know, I always have questions about room. just a couple of quick ones. Can you speak a little bit more about the note in your report on recapture of rent relief or the likelihood of avoiding it? I know that that deadline had been in September originally. Can you speak to how Treasury is treating that?
Yeah. So the next deadline is the end of November, and we're confident that we're going to meet all the requirements.
Is it a percent spend? It is a percentage spend,
and I think our percentage is $60 million. Christine Hunsinger, I know, is on the line. Christine, can you speak to the recapture exposure?
Sure. So the first benchmark was 30%, but for states that did not achieve the 30% recapture was not, they are not going to recapture any dollars, but the state does have to submit a performance improvement plan. So we were just a little bit shy, just over 28%. So the state will be submitting a performance improvement plan, but based on our approvals and payouts, we anticipate that we will hit the next two, so it's 40% by the end of November, and we are relatively confident that we will meet that deadline and be on track.
Thank you, and I have one more, and this may also be a Christine question. Can you speak a little bit about the current timeline from folks putting in their application to being approved? I know there was a goal early on, I think it was 21 days. And then once folks do hit that approval number, so, you know, if there's 45 million in approvals on the portal, does that mean that it's 45 million checks cut, or is there a lag between approved, like what's the lag between approved and people getting their payments?
Yeah, for so as far as timeline from the time you apply to the time your case is either paid or denied, the final disposition is reached, it varies. And it varies because the federal government requires us to have a prioritization system. So we address folks with eviction hearings, formal eviction action, and the lowest income and the most days out of work first. So it really does vary depending on your circumstances. So the people who are most in need are addressed first. What we are able to do is from the time your case is assigned to a caseworker, the final disposition will be achieved within 10 days. So that's, you know, that's way down from where we started. We think right now most cases are assigned within 30 days. There's a few we've got a few who have come back after they've been denied for non-responsiveness and appeal, a few that come back every day. So that throws the numbers off. But so really from the time you submit, it's about 30 days until you're assigned, and then it's 10 days until a final disposition is made. And then for the portal purposes, once we've approved payment, once it's approved, it shows up there. It is 10 to 14 days until payment is received by the landlord or tenant, and sometimes that depends on the U.S. mail, but that's the average that we're seeing, 10 to 14 days from the time we hit that approve button until the recipient receives payment.
Thank you. This is Corinne Myers. Just for the record, the rent relief questions were from Commissioner Designee Byrne.
Are there any other questions?
Just to clarify, Chris, 30 days, then 10 days, then another 10 days. What's the total time horizon from start to from end to end?
Yeah, so 30, so that would be 50 days from the day you create the account until payment is received in a bank account or the check is received by the tenant. The 10 to 14 days on the like receiving the payment from the time we approve it has to do with processing time for banks on the ACH, and then again the U.S. mail, which is you know, not really those things are not really within our control.
Thank you. I just wanted that to be clear because I had to add it all up.
Sure.
Thank you,
Christine. Any other comments you want to make?
It's Maria Berry. Quick question. On this housing loss island fact book, loss of units, is that book like presented broadly? Like, how do we get the word out about the housing needs and just make sure everybody's aware of the results of that study?
So we're very fortunate to have the director of Housing Works with us today, Brenda Clement. And I'm sure Brenda can advise this group how to get to that fact book.
Sure. I'm happy. They weren't quite ready from the printer, or otherwise they would have brought you your hard copies today to distribute, so we will get those to you soon. We send them out extremely widely to legislative bodies, to mayors, to city, town, and council planning departments, anyone and everyone who will take a copy, and even if they don't, I usually drop them off anyway. And we get lots of requests. We do lots of presentations, particularly right after the fact book. We've got about 10 or so books with different associations across the state already this month, and so that will continue. So we just keep pounding. We keep talking to the press at every opportunity. We send it regularly to the press as well, too, but always looking for opportunities to come and talk to groups and distribute books. Any that you need, let me know.
Great. Thank you.
Happy to invite Brenda to a credit committee and management committee if that's helpful for the board to have her come and speak.
I joke all the time that I'll talk about housing whether I'm invited to or not.
Yes.
So if you invite me, I will come. Yeah.
Yeah. Will do.
You will be invited.
You're invited.
Thank you. Let's move on to some of our project financing. Sure. Oh, I'm sorry.
Brenda, if I could ask you to come up to DOA and make a presentation.
I'm happy to do so.
That'd be great.
Yep.
Okay, let's turn our attention to board action number 4, the firm approval of financing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. This is Ann Berman. This first request for action is for a revised firm approval for a previously approved taxable first mortgage from the original amount of $700,000 to $1 million for Lincoln Loft. The developer is Dakota Partners Incorporated. As a quick refresh, Lincoln Loft is a recently completed 45-unit affordable housing development. It was an adaptive reuse of a historic mill in the Salesville area of Lincoln. The project was funded with 9% credits, a permanent loan from us, a home program loan, housing trust fund loans, and capital magnet fund loans. Construction was complete, and the development was fully occupied as of January 1st, 2021. The lease-up was very quick. Total development costs were about $735,000 over budget. So this is in excess of the contingency. These development costs were a result primarily of three issues. The state historic office required some design and scope changes, which were fairly expensive in order to comply with the federal historic tax credit program. There was additional lead paint remediation, and the developer incurred some additional costs associated with two subcontractors who were really not up to the task. The project is fully occupied. All reserves have been established. I will say the mortgage brings the loan to value to about 50%. So the additional financing gap was filled with additional historic tax credit equity, a lead remediation loan from us, additional deferred developer fee, and increase in the first mortgage. And the loan to value is about 50%. So happy to answer any questions.
I believe this is reviewed by our credit committee.
Yes, this is Kevin Horace. This is not unusual, and to have costs, particularly in a mill conversion project. Increases, we understand, not COVID-related or supply-related, just really more construction-related. And this is an increase in a hard debt amount, not a grant. And the committee does recommend approval of this.
I'll take that as a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Are there any comments or questions?
So I noticed that there's a deferred developer fee, so with the shared risk. Is that correct?
Well, yes. They contributed another. I think it was an additional $100,000 of their fee. They deferred that, and in addition to taking on $300,000 of debt, which had to be serviced.
Other questions or comments?
This is Leanne. I just have one comment, which is that I spoke to Ann for a while yesterday, and I feel like I adequately had all my questions answered about what the project was. I know the team's done extensive due diligence on looking at all the operating costs This makes sense, but I did have a bit of hesitation because I recall just last year a pretty significant increase by the same developer between preliminary and firm approval of a different project they did. And so I appreciate the team's due diligence, the credit committee's due diligence, but I want to be sure that when developers are bringing forward projects, they're being very conscious not to lowball their estimates because they think that will get them more favorable treatment, because I am now seeing a pattern developing. I don't want to be accusatory. I think both cases, it made a lot of sense in the situation, but I guess I just want folks to know that the treasurer is asking me to look carefully at continuing things by this developer of this nature. So, and I appreciate that the staff and credit committee do.
It's something we have talked, we've noticed the pattern, and it's on our radar.
Any other comments? Hearing none, we'll pass the council to conduct
This is Corey Myers. Commissioners, all those in favor of the revised firm approval of financing for Lincoln Lofts and Lincoln as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, please say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by unanimous vote.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is approval of financing for Factory and Main Street Apartments in Cumberland. Again, Ann Berman will present.
Thank you. This is Ann Berman. So this request for action is for preliminary commitment of a tax-exempt construction loan of $4 million and a taxable permanent loan of $300,000 for Factory Main Street Apartments. The developer is Valley Affordable Housing. Factory Main is currently three separate portfolios, 18 buildings, 75 apartments. Upon refinancing, they'll be combined into one single asset entity. Two of the existing portfolios are tax credit deals that have exceeded their initial 15-year compliance period. And the third portfolio consists of individual properties that Valley Affordable owns. They'll roll them all together into one development. It's a very cost-effective way to sort of move forward with these projects. So as part of the refinance, Valley Affordable will pay off amortizing loans that they owe to us and to, I believe, Citizens Bank. They will roll over existing soft debt that they have to us and to the HRC. From our perspective, we have reviewed this, and it does meet our requirements for rollover existing debt. The preliminary construction budget is approximately $30,000 per unit. Overall development cost is $105,000 per unit, which is pretty cost effective. And I would add that Valley Affordable has consistently been delivering cost-effective projects on time and often under budget, which doesn't happen very often. So we are seeking preliminary approval of a tax-exempt construction loan of $4 million and a taxable first mortgage of $300,000.
Thank you. And again, I think the credit committee's reviewed this.
Yes, we did. A couple items of note. One was the Citizens Cater, which is
Michael Associates.
Michael Associates. We've had some minor issues with them in the past, I believe, but they seem to be well-suited for this type of transaction, kind of small deals, scattered site deals, a little tougher deals. Glad to see they're in this. We also looked at the overall structure of this deal. It's rather heavy with fixed costs, soft costs, and maybe is better as doing without credits, but just something we threw out there for consideration, especially as there may be more money coming down the pike for housing. We might be able to look at how to do that a little bit more efficiently than with the 4% credit program. Another topic was the bridge loan. It's rather high. So we're asking staff look at ways maybe to mitigate repayment risk with this loan, such as looking at the pay-in installments from the investor. Otherwise, we're unanimous in recommending approval.
I'll accept that as a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Are there any questions or comments? Hearing none, let's ask our general counsel to take a voice vote.
Yep, this is Corinne Myers. Commissioners, all those in favor of the preliminary approval of financing for Factory and Main Street Apartments in Cumberland, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved by unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you. The next item is the firm approval of Housing Trust Fund Program funding for School Street Apartments in Central Falls. And again, Ann Berman.
Good morning. Thank you. This is Ann Berman. So this request for action is for firm approval of $171,801 in housing trust funds for School Street Apartments, which is a six-unit development that will be owned and operated by the Central Falls Housing Authority. The Housing Authority is teaming up with One Neighborhood Builders, who's helping to provide development expertise to complete this project. Central Falls will demolish an existing building and then put up the six-unit development that's essentially home and HTF assisted. Underwriting is still ongoing. There is a small gap, but we have until October 23rd, which is 2 days from now to commit the housing trust fund. So we're bringing it to you for firm commitment. The rest of the approval will come shortly. We believe that the gap will likely be funded by an increase in the loan from the permanent lender, which is not us.
Again, the credit the credit committee reviewed this?
Yes, we did. We discussed one neighborhood builders. They seem to be perhaps expanding their footprint. Is that correct? A little bit outside of their core,
yes.
But not the first time they've done so. So we feel comfortable with that arrangement. And we also just discussed the gap in funding. But again, Seth felt like that could be filled. So we felt confident in providing firm approval for this piece of the financing.
And again, I'll accept that as a motion to proceed. Is there a second?
Second.
Any comments, discussion, questions? Hearing none, let's ask our general counsel to again take the vote.
This is Corey Myers. For the record, the motion was made by Kevin Orth and seconded by Maria Berry. Commissioners, all those in favor of the firm approval of Housing Trust Fund program funding for School Street Apartments in Central Falls, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Thank you. The motion is approved by unanimous vote.
The next item on the agenda is Board Action Number 7, Approval of Transfer of Physical Assets for Newport Heights, Phase 1A and Phase 1B. Presentation will cover both, but we'll need to take separate votes when we get to it. Again, I'll turn it to Ann Berman.
Thank you. So this request for action is an administrative action that is required under our general rules governing the multifamily loan program. As the chairman said, we're requesting approval to the transfer of the limited partnership interest in two sister transactions. Newport Phase 1 was the first phase of a four-phase redevelopment for the Newport Housing Authority. It consisted of Phase 1A and 1B, both a 9% and a 4% partnership. Collectively, the phases own and operate 81 units for families. Trinity Financial was the developer. The development's initial compliance periods ended in 2019, and so for each transfer, the owner has requested our approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest from Aegon and their special limited partner, which is Transamerica, to a development that is controlled by the two principals of Trinity Financial. There's no new financing anticipated. The purchase price is $1, and the transferees will assume all existing obligations. I will say that Trinity is working on potential refinancing. There's Phase 1, there's Phase 2, there's Phase 3, each of which, so collectively there's 6 partnerships, and they're looking at the most cost-effective way to refinance all of these and move forward. So we're asking for approval of the following. Transfer of the limited partnership interest in Newport, Trinity Newport Limited Partnership, which is Phase 1A, from Garnet Litech Fund 32, who is the investor limited partner, and Transamerica, who is the special limited partner, to Trinity Financial Asset LLC. And then the transfer of the limited partnership interest in Trinity Newport 4 Limited Partnership from the same investors to Trinity Financial Asset LLC.
Okay. Again, let's ask our credit committee whether they had the opportunity to review this.
Yes, we did. This is Kevin Orth. Staff confirmed that this transfer of physical assets meets all requirements of that program, that there are no substantive operating issues with property. So the committee does recommend approval.
I think that is a motion to proceed. And let me turn to our general counsel to organize the two votes.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Corinne Meyer speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving a transfer of physical assets for Newport Heights and Newport with respect to Phase 1A, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved by unanimous vote.
And we need a second motion.
Indeed.
The second motion to proceed with the transfer of physical assets.
So moved.
There a second?
Second.
Any comments? Again, back to our general counsel.
This is Corinne Myers. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving a transfer of physical assets for Newport Heights and Newport with respect to Phase 1B, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Thank you. The motion is approved by unanimous vote.
Thank you. The next item has to do with approval to provide mortgage loan subservicing and document custodian services to the Maine State Housing Agency. I'll introduce Leslie McKnight to make the presentation.
Thank you. This is Leslie McKnight. To provide some historical background regarding this RFA, on August 18, 2016, Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners authorized Rhode Island Housing to provide mortgage loan subservicing and document custodian services to Maine Housing and to enter into a subservicing agreement. Pursuant to that authority, on January 1, 2017, Rhode Island Housing entered into a subservicing agreement with Maine Housing and began subservicing the portfolio. The portfolio consists of approximately 6,600 loans secured by liens on single-family, multifamily homes, condominium units, and mobile homes located throughout the state of Maine. Rhode Island Housing believes this subservicing arrangement is beneficial and would like to extend the term of our contract to subservice loans for Maine State Housing. We believe the benefits include the following. Modestly profitable as its own cost center, covers a significant portion of the agency's servicing overhead, the loan servicing division, including fixed cost that we incur for the servicing of the Rhode Island Housing loans. Increases overall economies of scale and helps to pay for our software systems. Seen as credit positive by our rating agencies, who actually referred to this arrangement, that Rhode Island Housing has further diversified its revenue stream. We believe there's modest risk with regards to financial risk, particularly because the fee schedule adjusts for higher costs of delinquent loans in the Maine Housing portfolio. The new contract, the new proposed contract, will provide an approximate 15% increase in fees with an annual escalator of 4.5% for specific fees and 3% for all other fees. The proposed contract will also allow for renegotiation of pricing in year four. The request for action is authorization for Rhode Island Housing and Mortgage Finance Corporation to continue to provide mortgage loan subservicing and document custodian services with respect to the Maine State Housing Authority's residential loan portfolio for an additional three-year period with a two-year renewal option. Rhode Island Housing believes that a continued subservicing arrangement with Maine Housing will provide a public benefit, serve to support housing for low and moderate income persons and enhance Rhode Island Housing's ability to fulfill its obligations to the residents of the state of Rhode Island. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. This was not reviewed by a committee, but we do need a motion to begin the discussion.
Ms. Leanne, I make a motion.
A second.
Second. Steve.
Now, are there any questions or comments?
Just a question on terms of the history of the relationship. There's always issues in a relationship, and it's not how you resolve them that really determines the quality of the relationship. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think we've had a pretty good relationship with Maine State Housing. I believe they're very satisfied with the service that we've delivered. You know, are there bumps in the road? Whenever there are issues, obviously open communication is critical. So we have a very, very good communication back and forth with staff. Our line staff speaks with their line staff. Supervisors speak with supervisors. I speak with the director of loan administration there. So I think, you know, anything can always be solved with effective communication.
Other questions or comments?
Commissioner Orth, I have a question. I believe that when we undertook this back in 2016, it was with the idea of kind of sending out this test balloon and seeing if this was a line of business that made sense to maybe grow. Since that time, we've just stayed with Maine. I'm sure you've asked that question. What should we do with this business? Should we try to grow it to other states, or should we kind of say that was a good 5 years and go? It seems like you've taken a third approach, which is just stick with Maine. You want to talk to that a little bit?
So it's not just Maine. So Leslie also services for an agency in the state for the clean water.
Yep.
So
okay.
Leslie also services to them. So we certainly would be interested in expanding, but I think
the appetite for subservicing is very different than master servicing. So folks are looking for a little bit higher level of servicing, and that would cause risk to us that we would not want to take on. So I think we're open to it, and I think Leslie's team certainly has the capacity, but it's just a matter of the services that we would want to offer. Is it a match with other folks out there? You know, Dan Brennan, who's the ED in Maine, is very, very happy with the work that we've done, and I think that he would be hard-pressed to find another servicer that could do the work that Leslie and her team does.
But it's profitable enough, even with that scale?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Leslie, are there many other HFAs that take on this responsibility, or just
so there are a couple of other HFAs that are actually doing, as Carol referenced, master servicing, right? So primarily the difference is we're servicing a mortgage revenue bond portfolio for Maine State Housing. Many of the housing agencies have moved to the TVA market, and that's what master servicing is. They want you to purchase the loan, they want you to deliver it to the secondary market. Mm. It's really a different animal, and so that's what Idaho is doing right now, and Alabama does a little bit of both. So Idaho and Alabama are the other two HFAs that are doing that type of business. I think we'd like to be able to find kind of unique portfolios that would meet our match, and if they are available, we are making people aware that we're open to looking at those relationships.
Any other comments? Maria?
I'm good.
And we turn it back to our general counsel for a vote.
This is Corey Myers. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving the provision of mortgage loan subservicing and document custodian services to Maine State Housing Authority, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, please say nay. The motion is approved by a unanimous vote. Thank you.
There being no further business, I would request a motion to adjourn.
This is Leanne. I make a motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Again, turn back to our general counsel.
This is Corey Myers. Commissioners, all those in favor of adjourning this meeting, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion is approved. Thank you.
And the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
I wanted to...